Welcome to Train Time, a podcast from the Train Campaign, working to connect cities and rural areas because we're convinced that passenger rail is the essential framework for efficient, sustainable transportation in the 21st century. Train Time is hosted by Karen Christensen, founder and president of the Train Campaign.
Party boys, is that the chimney be choo-choo?
Today, we are talking once again to Massachusetts Senator Eric Lesser, who has represented his hometown of Long Meadow and neighboring communities in the greater Springfield area since 2014. In addition to his other legislative accomplishments, he is known for leading the effort to bring frequent, fast passenger rail service from Boston to western Massachusetts. Senator Lesser, what a pleasure to talk to you again, and thank you for taking time.
Well, thanks for having me, Karen. Good to be back.
Yes, we recorded a podcast for the Train Campaign just over a year ago in July of 2019. It seems like forever ago, doesn't it? So much has happened.
It really does. Although it depends. It feels like a long time ago for sure, but sometimes it feels like it was yesterday. I go back and forth.
So true. You know, our focus, of course, with Train Time is on trains and transportation and Western Massachusetts. But I really would like to hear about what you've been doing, the COVID-19 crisis, because it seems like all these things really do fit together. So give us a little rundown on what you've been up to, please.
Yeah, well. So first, I mean, I think it's a truism at this point to say that our lives were completely different before March than they were after March of this year when COVID-19 struck. Really, for me, there were a few things I was laser focused on from the beginning. First was getting our handle around the appropriate state response. And, you know, for lack of, you know, certainly maybe we don't want to get into a bigger political discussion here, but so the lack of coordinated federal response really meant that the states were left to make, you know, the really urgent decisions at the start of this crisis. And as this crisis has continued in terms of school openings and closures, working with the governor's team on the Department of Public Health guidance, working on the essential business and non-essential business closures and opening protocols, we faced a raft of severe economic consequences very quickly. Around unemployment insurance, around help for needy families, around food pantries and food access. We faced a crisis at our hospitals as elective procedures were canceled. Our hospitals and our healthcare systems were facing, you know, really, it is not an exaggeration to say the threat of economic and fiscal collapse when their revenues suddenly stopped. And of course, on top of all of this, we were facing an urgent health crisis and mounting cases every day. So, really, in the early phases, it was working with the various organs of state government, making sure that information was being provided to our communities that was consistent, that was clear, that was factual. And then it was really, day-to-day emergencies that were coming up in our community, food banks that needed more food, hospitals that needed financial help from the state, essential workers that needed PPE protection and needed assurances that their workplaces were going to be safe, coordinating and working with the National Guard to make sure that resources were mobilized at nursing homes. We had the horrific issues at the soldiers' home, had many, many constituents, their families we were working with, navigating that. So the early phase of the crisis was really about getting a handle around what was coming at us, making sure that we were being a resource to our communities at a very urgent moment, and then really doing our best to share and disseminate the fact-based information people needed to know. And I can tell you, Karen, I mean, we saw the feedback from that. You know, for example, like traffic to my Facebook page, my Senate Facebook page, went up by more than 100% in the early weeks of March, and at one point went nearly 10x what it normally is, because people needed information. They needed information about mass health coverage. They needed information about business, the essential and non-essential business closures. And I was committed in a moment like that not to play politics with the information, to just share with people the information that was being distributed by our state government. And that's what we did. As the virus numbers began to come under control and as the spread began to slow down, we really had to begin to have these longer term conversations about the structural issues in our society, in our communities, that coronavirus revealed. It really didn't create them, it revealed them. At the top of this are the issues you and I have talked about many times: income inequality, racial inequality, environmental degradation that has meant that communities that I represent, for example, Springfield, highest asthma rates in the country. We know asthma is an underlying condition that exacerbates coronavirus. So these issues built on top of each other. And I'm committed, and I think a group of younger public servants, newer public servants that are coming through are committed to rebuilding better than what our where we were at before coronavirus. What I said on the Senate floor after preparing our economic rescue package was, you know, what we found from coronavirus was that we actually had to crush two curves. When this started, we thought that our goal was to get the virus curve down. But what we've discovered is that we also need to flatten the second curve, which is a curve of skyrocketing economic and racial inequality in our society, in our state, and certainly in Western Massachusetts. And just to bring it back to the topic here, the topic at hand, rail is one of the key solutions to those multi-layered intersectional crises that we face.
And tell us why. You know, before the COVID-19, before the 10th or 12th, 10th of March, there was so much going on. I was in Boston at the State House that day talking about rail revival. There was so much happening, a lot of contention, a lot of debate, but a lot of movement and interest. And then there was the lockdown, and people said, is rail going to matter? Are people going to travel at all anymore? How is this even part of the future? But in fact, there's been a lot going on, hasn't there? Can you explain why? People will wonder, how do trains matter now?
So first, yeah, I just, you know, there is a school of thought and a group of skeptics. I point out that many of these people were skeptics of rail before coronavirus and are now using coronavirus to say the state can't afford it. The state has more urgent priorities. This isn't the time to be talking about infrastructure, to be talking about rail. And I just want to respond to that right now unequivocally and say the moment has actually never been more urgent for these types of investments. And here's why. We are facing, as you and I just talked about, a set of interrelated, simultaneous crises. We have a severe public health crisis. We are doing what we need to, and we need to stay focused on doing what we need to get that crisis under control. We need dramatically more testing in Western Mass. We need dramatically better investments in PPE. We are working with the Mass Life Sciences Center, for example, on new therapeutics to effectively treat COVID-19. And then, of course, we hope down the line, eventually, we're going to have a safe and broadly available vaccine. So the fighting the virus is, of course, number one in the short term. But we have multiple other issues and very severe issues that need to be dealt with. The second crisis, the second curve that needs to be flattened, is an economic crisis, the most severe economic and jobs crisis since the Great Depression. This project, this rail project, is a New Deal project. If you think about it, back in the 1930s, our country built 78,000 bridges at the height of the Great Depression. We built 800 airports back when air travel was just beginning. At the height of the Great Depression, most Americans had never even seen an airplane, let alone been on an airplane, when our country decided to build 800 airports at the height of the Great Depression. The Empire State Building was built at the height of the Great Depression, the Hoover Dam. And we look back on those investments as inevitable, but at the time they were controversial. and they were presented as a way to put the country back to work and to solve the jobs crisis. Rail investments would put thousands of people to work immediately building it, and it would put tens of thousands of people to work in the secondary effects once the rail is here and we have all the development that comes with it. The second crisis we face, and we faced it in our country for a long time, but it's come back to the forefront, of course, after the murder of George Floyd and the issues coronavirus has revealed, is we have a racial inequality crisis in our country. And I'll point out, for example, Springfield, a majority minority city, a city with one of the largest Hispanic and African-American populations in the Northeast, outside of the big cities, of course, of Boston and New York, could be transformed by this investment. It would create thousands of new jobs. It would create immense new opportunities for small business and economic growth in regions of the state and in communities of the state that have been left out of that growth. And then, you know, the other crisis that needs to be discussed is the climate crisis. And coronavirus has again revealed this, because again, you've seen the effect of dirty air, of asthma, of underlying conditions exacerbating the COVID pandemic. And this project would be our Green New Deal for Massachusetts. This would be the single largest reduction in greenhouse gases in our Commonwealth history. 40% of the state's greenhouse gas emissions comes from transportation, almost all from cars. This would take tens of thousands of cars off the road. It would create tens of thousands of good, high-paying jobs. And it would reduce air pollution and save our climate in the process. So when you look at the big challenges we face, whether it's fighting racial inequality, fighting the scourge of income inequality, and especially the lack of economic growth in Western Mass, taking on the climate crisis, this project is at the center of all of those. And I think for those of us, you, me, so many others, who have been so passionate about this for so long, it's really incumbent on all of us to make the case for why rail, and in particular, East-West Rail connecting Pittsfield, Springfield, and Boston, is one of the key solutions to the really defining issues of our time.
Senator Lesser, can you, for those who listen to this podcast and who don't know our region, I mean, one of the wonderful things about doing a podcast is it does reach an audience that's actually doing remote, you know, events is that we can reach a larger audience and people far away who are interested in what we're doing. Can you tell people about what Western Mass is like? What Springfield? Can you characterize it for those who are not familiar with it?
I appreciate that opportunity because I was frankly a little bit frustrated with some of the national coverage of recent news in Western Mass, and for a variety of reasons. But I think principally, I think many national reporters and people who either don't live here or have otherwise created ties here or traveled here really misunderstand what our region is like. First off, I think that a lot of people assume, who don't live in Massachusetts, assume that Massachusetts is Boston, right? We've all faced this when you travel, you meet someone from outside of the region and they say, oh, where are you from? And I say, oh, I'm from Massachusetts. And they just assume you're from Boston. right. So I think that there's a national perception that the whole state is Kendall Square, right? Where the whole state is Cambridge. And of course, we know even in Boston, there's immense diversity and there's many communities in Boston that have been left out of that tech boom. But I think it's safe to say that the general kind of national or even global perception of Massachusetts, for better or worse, is that it's a tech-centered, highly educated, you mentioned Harvard, that's what people tend to think of when they think of Massachusetts. And then I think in Western Mass, sometimes there's a sense that the sort of cultural institutions of the Berkshires or the academic centers of Amherst and Northampton are Western Mass also. And I think what's important for people to understand is I actually think our region is a microcosm of the country. So take my state Senate district, for example. I have about 170,000 people I represent in 9 communities. My communities are incredibly diverse, really, in every way, really a microcosm of the country. I have one of the largest Air Force reserve bases. I also have multiple elite colleges. I have a tier one medical research center, and I have the headquarters of Smith & Wesson. I have some of the most rural communities in the state, and I have some of the most densely populated urban communities, and I have suburban communities, everything in between. I have some of the wealthiest communities in the state, and I have some of the poorest. So really across the board, there needs to be, I think, an acknowledgement that Western Mass is a much more diverse place, really in every sense, than I think a lot of people understand. One thing, though, that unites all of those communities I just pointed out that I represent, rural, urban, suburban, urban, densely populated, less densely populated, wealthier, less wealthy, industrial, academic, is that the region has not kept pace with the growth that we've seen in the metro Boston area. And many families, no matter where they may have started, don't feel like their kids or grandkids are going to get the same opportunities that they did or that their parents did. And so a lot of families feel like they need to leave, and especially young people feel they need to leave. And so smart policy can reverse that. And, just to connect it again back to the current crisis, if we do the investments that have to happen to create universal high-speed internet, if we make the investments we need to make to get that east-west and north-south rail done, if you combine that with the trend towards remote working, we could see immense opportunity for Western Mass, because we are a place that can be a real center for this new era that we're entering. So, for example, someone in a lot of fields, the 9-to-5 workday is really a thing of the past. People are working all the time. They're working off hours. They're working at home. The conventional commute to work at 9 a.m., commute home at 5 p.m., is really something that's changing. Somebody could live in Great Barrington or live in Pittsfield or live in Holyoke or live in Longmeadow and work by Zoom, 4 days a week. Maybe one day a week goes into Boston, one day a week goes into New York, or once a month or whatever, but is otherwise working remotely. That is completely doable from Western Mass. And now all of a sudden, all of these opportunities that had once required leaving the community will allow people to stay in the community. So someone who's graduating from UMass Amherst with an engineering degree, they can work for an engineering firm in Silicon Valley, or a tech developer in Kendall Square, and they can stay in Amherst while they do it. That is a huge change and is something that we ignore at our own peril.
So we need connectivity. We need internet connectivity. And what do people say to you about rail and why trains will make their lives better?
Because of what it represents for all the things that we've just discussed. And I think you're right, Karen, you really hit the nail on the head. It's about connectivity. Look, Western Mass is a great place to grow up. It's where I grew up. It's where I'm raising my daughters. We know it's a great place. Those of us who live here really know it's a best kept secret. Think about it. It's a beautiful place. We have incredible cultural assets. We have really great, talented people. But let's be honest, our region has been left out of the economic boom that has happened all around us. And the results have really been devastating for our communities and for our families. Backing up, 50 years ago, we were a manufacturing center, and all of our different communities around Western Mass specialized in different things. In Ludlow, a town I represent, they made twine, and they made twine and textiles. In Holyoke, they made paper. In Pittsfield, you had General Electric. In Springfield, you had automobiles and automotive parts and aircraft engines. In Chicopee, you had Uniroyal Tire. You went around Western Mass and you saw paper mills, automotive companies, manufacturing that employed thousands of people in each place with good, high-paying, often union jobs. And we know what happened in the 1970s, in the 1980s, in the 1990s. When I was growing up, those jobs left. They moved elsewhere. They moved overseas. They became automated. And while other parts of our state were able to backfill that change with new jobs in high tech, in life sciences, we made some progress in those areas, but we weren't able to keep up. And the result has been really decades of an economy that has left too many people out and has left too many people hurting. And the way to reverse that is to reconnect us to the world that is growing. And whether that's, whether that's life sciences, whether that's tech policy, whether that's, things like advanced manufacturing, where somebody without a college degree after a 10-week training program can make $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year as a precision machinist, as a tool and die maker. But we can't do those things if we don't have the connectivity. And so the connectivity is across the board. It's rail, it's high-speed internet, it's mindset too. That's a big part of it also.
So what's ahead? I noticed that you tweeted this week about a conversation between Congressman Richard Neal and Senator Elizabeth Warren about the East-West Rail project. So what do we see ahead? What can we expect from Massachusetts and from our legislators in Washington in the months and years ahead?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I'm on pins and needles with all of this because I do think we're at a pivotal moment. In many respects, the stars are aligning for East-West Rail. We've been working on this. Look, I campaigned on this as a 28-year-old in 2014 when I came home to my home community after working for President Obama in Washington, after attending schools in Boston. I came home and I saw what was happening. I felt it in my community where I had grown up, and we made the case that this is not an optional project. We need this project. There is no other choice, because the alternative is Western Mass continuing to fall further and further behind. So, the governor vetoed the first try. We tried again. Then it got blocked in the legislature by some special interests. We overcame that. Finally, we went to the people. And we organized the public. We did a cross state tour, building support for rail. And the governor, finally agreed and put the study in place. The study then got delayed. Then we had a global pandemic that delayed it again. But we haven't let up. And now we're at a moment this fall where the study will be released, and we have a congressman, Richard Neal, who is in an incredibly powerful position in Washington, who has also made rail a key part of his platform. We have two U.S. senators, Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey, who have both publicly multiple times at this point now over many years committed to making East-West Rail happen. And we will hopefully very soon have a president, Joe Biden, who is a huge train buff, who himself, rode Amtrak to get to and from Washington, from Wilmington, Delaware, for his whole career. So, and again, most importantly, the homework will have been done on the state level because the study will be completed. So we are really at a key moment. So I'm hopeful if Joe Biden is elected, if we have, and I expect we will have a House majority in Congress, so Congressman Neal will remain chairman of Ways and Means, we will have two advocates for rail, Senator Warren and Senator Markey, both in great positions of influence. And on a national conversation, if a Green New Deal starts to become reality nationally, and I certainly hope it will, we need to also be clear. This is a Green New Deal project because this is clean investments in clean infrastructure that are going to create good, high-paying jobs. At the same time, they reduce greenhouse gases and take cars off the road. So I'm very excited. I'm very energized by the prospect here. And I think we have no other choice because of the crisis we face, the economic inequality and environmental crisis we face that coronavirus has shown and exposed in great effect and to great impact. And so that's the moment we're in. And so, you know, for people who are listening, we really need everybody mobilized at this moment to try to bring this to the finish line.
To bring it to the finish line, yes. And you were there at the beginning and will stay with it to the finish line, Eric, I know. Thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on where we stand now at this important moment. And we'll have to touch base again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Karen. And I hope you and your family and everyone are doing well. And I just want to thank you because, we really rely on you. We rely on you and all of our train advocates all over the country, really, who have now been focused on this project. And have really been, they've been our fuel for a very important and very long effort. Thank you.
No, I so agree with you that this is important for Massachusetts and Western Massachusetts, but it's also a model for the country. And we can do something here that really will show what's possible in the futures. And you know, you've been leading the charge for so long. Thank you. Do stay well. Get some downtime. Enjoy the weekend. Okay. Thank you, Senator. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll chat. Thanks for joining us today. The Train Time Podcast is brought to you by the Train Campaign, sharing a vision for passenger rail as the essential framework for efficient, sustainable transportation in the 21st century. Learn more at traincampaign.org.